What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The Supreme Court prepares to hear the most consequential abortion rights case in a generation. Plus, filled up the tank recently? It's not cheap. Gas prices are up about 50% this year. And assessing the economic effects of the rush to try to contain the Omicron variant.
There will be a small hit to growth, and there will be some sort of addition to the inflationary pressures that we've seen.
It's Wednesday, December 1st. I'm Peter Granitz of the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The White House is considering requiring travelers to the U.S. show a negative COVID test within 24 hours of boarding a plane, shorter than the current 72-hour window. It's just one travel regulation governments are imposing to slow the spread of the Omicron variant. Canada will block travel from three more African countries and is requiring all travelers, except those from the U.S., to get tested on arrival and isolate until they get their results. And the World Health Organization is recommending that people 60 and older postpone travel to countries with community transmission. The Supreme Court will today hear arguments in the most significant abortion rights case in decades. The state of Mississippi is asking the court to uphold its law that bans the procedure after 15 weeks of pregnancy. Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves told NBC's Meet the Press that the court should overturn Roe v. Wade, the ruling that granted the nationwide right to an abortion.
There is nowhere in the Constitution that prohibits individual states like Mississippi, to limit access to abortions.
We'll have a detailed look at the oral arguments on the What's News podcast later today. CNN has suspended anchor Chris Cuomo indefinitely. The move comes after the New York Attorney General's office released records that detailed how closely Cuomo advised his brother, former Governor Andrew Cuomo, amid several sexual assault accusations. Andrew Cuomo resigned earlier this year. CNN says Chris's role in protecting his brother raises serious questions about his conduct. Chris Cuomo did not immediately respond to requests for comment. And we're exclusively reporting that President Biden is considering Richard Cordray to serve as the Federal Reserve's top banking regulator. Cordray's nomination could hearten progressives who want the central bank to take a tougher approach to regulation. One source told the Journal that Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren has pushed the White House to consider Cordray for the position. He declined to comment, and the White House has said it'll announce Fed appointments soon. If you drive a car in the United States, you likely do not need the reminder that gas prices are rising. They're up about 50% this year, and there are a lot of reasons why. Hartika Singh has a grasp on why fuel prices are rising. She's a markets reporter and joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter. How's it going?
Going well, thank you. This is not a single reason issue here, right? What are the key factors driving up the cost of gasoline?
Yeah, so there's definitely a perfect storm, one might say, for energy prices right now. We're seeing really high demand from people as we all venture outside, you know, with the pandemic fading away a little bit. People are asking for more goods, which needs more production in factories, thus more energy there as well. At the same time, it is being contrasted by really low supplies. So OPEC, which is like the oil exporting countries, they have chosen to not open their taps more widely. So right now we're seeing low supply from them, in addition with American producers as well, who are being very, very disciplined in their approach to, you know, provide energy to consumers. So right now we're seeing that being contrasted with supply, and it's really creating a lot of pressure on people.
Could the OPEC countries put more supply out there and just drive the cost down right away?
It might be a bit more complicated than that, but yes, perhaps that might be the case. But again, it's really hard to determine right now how to open their taps, because it's really hard to estimate demand, basically. Like we saw with the Omicron variant coming up, things might shut down again. You know, there's no guarantee that we're out of this COVID pandemic. So it's hard to estimate whether to open it or not.
Last week, the U.S. and other nations agreed to release some barrels of oil from their strategic reserves. Are we seeing any price changes from that?
Last week on the back of that news, we definitely saw crude oil prices and Brent crude prices pull back a little bit. And then toward the end of the week, what happened was the news of Omicron variant spread out, and that created even more downward pressure on oil prices, causing them to pull down. I think it was 13% or something like that, and just on Friday itself. So it definitely seems like just that news and the combination of travel restrictions possibly coming back up, lockdowns being instituted again, that is really creating a lot of pressure on prices right now.
And what do we expect moving forward?
Moving forward, well, first of all, it's hard. But what I've been hearing from analysts so far is that the new variant spreading out and, you know, people perhaps going back into lockdowns, it might be a little bit better. Prices might come back down. And then in addition to that, obviously, the news we saw last week where a bunch of countries have come together to release more oil, that might also have an impact for a little bit. But yeah, it's hard to determine. Lastly, I would say, as we discussed, OPEC Plus trying to lift supply could also help the prices. So I guess it's just a wait and see period kind of right now.
Hartika, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Peter.
That's Hartika Singh. She's our markets reporter. Coming up, a look at the potential economic consequences as governments rush to prevent the spread of the Omicron variant.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Governments around the world appear to be preparing for the worst when it comes to the Omicron variant. They're shutting borders as scientists still try to uncover just how quickly it's spreading. And those restrictions will certainly affect the global economy. That said, each variant has had a decreased negative effect on growth as the world becomes better at tackling the pandemic. So for more on the potential economic effects of the Omicron variant, we are joined by Paul Hannon. He covers the economy from his base in London. Welcome back.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. It has been all of a week since we first learned about this variant. What do the early signs show us?
Well, it's still pretty unclear exactly what this is and what new challenges it might present for the health systems and for government economic policy. What we do know is that while scientists are trying to figure out exactly, you know, how different this virus is and what its potential threat level might be, that some governments are acting very conservatively and putting limits on travel, considering sort of the possibility of new restrictions. And in that case, there will be a small hit to growth and there will be some sort of addition to the inflationary pressures that we've seen from disruptions to supply chains.
Yeah, that's something that we heard Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell say yesterday on Capitol Hill. Let's take a listen.
The recent rise in COVID-19 cases and the emergence of the Omicron variant pose downside risks to the employment and economic activity and increased uncertainty for inflation.
Paul, what do you hear there?
I hear a policymaker who's being quite careful about things, not making too many rushed judgments, which is his job, but, you know, being aware that there might be new challenges ahead as a result of this new variant. We don't know yet exactly what the scale of those challenges will be. I mean, it could range from something that's pretty mild, that isn't a great deal different from the Delta variant we've been through, which did, you know, come with costs. There's no question about that in lives and in terms of lost economic activity and higher inflation. Or there could be a different sort of path here where we see something that quite closely resembles the very first wave, where lots of governments have to close large parts of their economies down. And in actual fact, with inflation in that case, you might see prices falling. So when somebody says downside risks, what they mean is there is a possibility that this will do harm in a certain way that I can predict, but it's also possible that it won't.
Are there certain sectors that might be at risk right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's back to the airlines, international tourism for sure. And you've seen that in a lot of the early equity market moves. The first response was to put up barriers to travelers from Southern Africa, you know, the places where people think this new variant might be most widespread. But some governments have also broadened that so that they're asking for more conclusive testing before people arrive in their countries and testing once they get in. I mean, in the UK, we've had that sort of response. So that's going to deter people from traveling even when they've decided it's okay from a health perspective.
What about countries? Are any countries more at risk of economic fallout from this than others?
Well, to begin with, the Southern African countries that have been at the receiving end of these travel bans are probably most immediately susceptible to harm. Further out, it's difficult to say. You know, going by Delta, it's spread pretty quickly and it's spread everywhere. But there is a group of countries that are still sticking to this zero harm goal. China is now by far the most important, which means they won't tolerate any sort of new infections of any kind. And they pursue that goal by closing parts of their economies down, including ports in China's case. So in terms of economic damage, that seems to be where it's going to be greatest. If it remains just a sort of variant of concern without any particular new problems. If it's something that evades vaccines, then the lockdowns are likely to be much more widespread. And the sort of track record suggests that Western Europe in particular would go for quite stringent lockdowns. And in that case, the economic damage would be greater. In the US, historically, it's been quite variable. It's varied from state to state. So the US as a whole, probably less likely to see a big loss in output than Europe or China.
We should say that the world is in a better place than when Delta emerged over the summer. And it's certainly much more prepared than it was when the original wave of COVID hit in March of 2020. You know, people are vaccinated, economies are growing. How severe could this actually be?
I don't think it would be as severe as the very first wave. Back in early 2020, we didn't even know if there was going to be a workable vaccine to use against this thing. Right now, the worst case scenario appears to be that it would take something like 100 days to adapt the vaccines that we do have so that we could get back to the situation that we're in now. So it's unlikely that it's going to be the first wave impact, which, just to give you a sense, in Europe was a loss of about 15% of economic activity in a six-month period. By the time the second big wave had hit around the turn of this year, the loss in output was about 0.7%. And that was with, you know, higher infection rates and higher death rates than the first time out. So yes, we have figured out how to live, get by with this thing. The only thing that's hard to kind of judge is how much of a hit to confidence it would be.
Paul Hannon, thanks for your time.
You're welcome, Peter.
That's Paul Hannon. He covers the economy for us based out of London. And finally, what does a low-carbon home look like? Some of us are trying to reduce the carbon footprint of our homes, but may not have an idea of where to start. Catherine Blunt covers renewable energy and utilities, and she's got some advice for us.
There's a number of different resources to help you assess whether your home could be well-suited to have solar panels, for example, or to determine what it would cost to retrofit your home with, say, a heat pump, which is something that essentially it is something that transfers hot air into your home or out of your home in lieu of a gas furnace. Through your local utility or other government programs, you can usually find some information and about the actual process as well as whether there's incentives or rebates available in your area.
You can find out more at our website, WSJ.com. And that's what's news for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Peter Grandis with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.